the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back. Oh, oh, oh.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast, the very first Wednesday ACC edition, late Wednesday night. You'll probably get this on Thursday morning, but it's going to be me and Kyle Bailey every week going forward talking ACC football. We get into plenty of ACC throughout the whole season, but I wanted to give a specific episode every week just to the ACC. We got a lot of fans in ACC country, Virginia Tech, Clemson, all the like. So Kyle does the show in Charlotte with me on WFNZ, does a great job, and it's about time that we finally got this thing rolling. So we'll have other guests throughout the season as well, who'll join Kyle and I. But for today, it'll just be me and Kyle. Before we get to that, I want to remind you guys, some of you did this after the last episode, go rate, review the podcast on iTunes. Remember, I was not a five-star recruit, but I do want to be a five-star podcast. The way you can do that is by going on to Apple Podcasts or Stitch or wherever you're listening. Give it the review. Now, here's the key. I want you, when it tells you where to list your name, they can tell you where you write your name as you give the review, I want you to put the most random college football player you can ever imagine, your favorite name ever in college football, as the name, and then leave that five-star review. Leave a quick review telling how much you love the podcast, and then you're good. If I get to 150 reviews, right now I've got 95, so I see the count. If I get to 150 by the end of the season, I will pick my favorite name that you list, that my favorite name drop of all the reviews, and I will give that person a $25 Amazon gift card. So go leave a review right now. I already have Rodrigo Blankenship in the house. He left a review the other day, so you've got a high bar. Rodrigo Blankenship, maybe the oldest kicker in the history of college football, feels like he's been there for 50 years. So go leave the review and do the right thing. Five stars, help me out. And now welcome on Kyle Bailey. And Kyle, before we get started, I need to know, who's your favorite, the favorite name? There's been so many great names in college football. I tweeted this out like 3 weeks ago, and it got 500 responses. Favorite name ever in college football?
Oh, dude. You put me on the spot here.
Like, I'll give you some of mine. I got Trunk Candidate.
Marcus Tuiasosopo.
Ooh, that's a good one. But there's like 18 Tuiasosopos.
There's a bunch of Tuiasosopos.
He was kind of the one who started the Tuiasosopo dynasty. Back at, man, 2001 Washington?
Yeah.
That team beat Miami. Cut them out of the national title game.
There's some good ones out there, though. This one's not as – Noel Devine was a good one.
Noel Devine, YouTube star.
Yeah, the kid could fly.
Porkchop Womack.
Porkchop, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that's
Kenyon Rambo.
Damn, I would have come with a whole sheet of names. So, it's my favorite exercise.
I know. Well, I feel like I'm a – every year, I think like Athlon or some blog, probably 18 different blogs, do their all name team every year, like the craziest names in college football. I'm going to do like an all time team, and I'm going to go position by position. At some point this season, when I actually have 10 minutes to myself, I'm going to go right on the blog and I'm going to do my all time, all name team in college football. And I'm excited for the research because there are names that when I tweeted this out, whatever it was right before the season, I said, tweet me your most random college football name. There were literally, I got hundreds of responses, and there were names of guys that I mean, you would never, ever remember in your life. It's actually pretty crazy. So leave a review on the podcast, but when it asks for your name, I don't need your real name. I don't need your AIM screen name. I want the most random college football player you can remember as your name, and then leave a little quick write-up how much you love the podcast. Give it a five-star review. If you don't give it a five-star review, you are not eligible for the gift card. All right, no shenanigans. But Kyle, man, I'm excited to do this. I'm ready to talk ACC only every Wednesday. There's a lot to get to with the ACC this week, this season. And I guess let's go ahead and start. I don't want to start with the bad. We'll save Larry Fedora for like 15 minutes from now. But why don't we go ahead and start with Clemson? And I heard you talking about this on your radio show, Garcia and Bailey, yesterday with Frank. The idea about Clemson's quarterback. So Clemson wins 28-26 against Texas A&M. Kelly Bryant clearly was the guy that needed to be under center for Clemson to win on Saturday, given the way we saw Trevor Lawrence play. But going forward, I still think that Trevor Lawrence needs to get a chance to win this job. I expect Dabo Swinney to give Trevor Lawrence a chance to win this job. What did you see on Saturday? Where do you think the state of Clemson's quarterback situation is after what happened in College Station?
You know, it's tough. Like, Frank and I do disagree on this. Frank is very much – and Frank's the old-school football coach guy, you know, where it's this is your guy. He's the unquestioned leader. He's the veteran. He's been around. This is who you're going to battle with, right? And I get that. I do. But it's obvious that Dabo wants Trevor Lawrence to figure out a way to be that guy at some point this season. Not eventually, not next year or the year after. This season is what they want. You know why? Because Kelly Bryant last year in the college football playoff, as you well know, completed 49% of his passes through three interceptions, or was it two? Well, I forget which.
It was multiple interceptions.
That I do know. Multiple interceptions, under 50% completion percentage. They didn't trust him to take any real shots down the field until they absolutely had to. Kelly Bryant's not beating Alabama, right? We saw this defense last year on the field against Alabama. We know they're good. We know Clemson's defense can hang with Alabama. Can the offense get the job done? And with Kelly Bryant at quarterback, they cannot. And I think Dabo Swinney knows that, and I think most people know that. So I saw Trevor Lawrence come in, throw a touchdown pass. I know T. Higgins made a phenomenal play on that, but it was still a good throw, right? Right. In a hostile road environment. You know, Frank's been beating the drum. Oh, they would have lost the game if Trevor Lawrence had stayed in. Yeah, maybe. But when you platoon quarterbacks, it's already a difficult thing to balance. And when you're asking a true freshman to platoon and to not be able to get into a rhythm, it makes his life even more difficult. So they're going to continue to play Trevor Lawrence because Dabo Swinney sees that this is the guy that's going to lead this team potentially back to winning another national championship. And I think Trevor Lawrence is a future first overall draft pick. So yeah, he's going to play.
Well, there's no question the ceiling is higher on Lawrence. And Dabo gave him every chance to win that job in fall camp throughout the first 2 weeks. And he's going to continue to do that. The ceiling is way higher for Lawrence. Here's the thing about Kelly Bryant that people, I think, are ignoring after Saturday's game. Kelly Bryant played much better than Trevor did through four quarters. Kelly Bryant did the same thing last year in Blacksburg against Virginia Tech, against Louisville early in the season last year. Against B-plus teams, Kelly Bryant's fine, okay? Clemson's not worried about beating B-plus teams. The bar for Clemson, as you said, is beating Alabama, okay? I mean, Clemson's going to try to win a national title this season. Their window is now. They're going to be very good for time to come.
Yes.
But given the experience they have on defense and the weapons, of course, that they have on offense, which is nothing new, they have a real chance to win it all this season. And Kelly Bryant, why he may have marginally improved from last year to this year, is pretty much doing exactly or did exactly against Texas A&M what he did last year against B to B plus teams. There's nothing that I saw on Saturday that made me say, okay, he took a leap forward. He might have taken a half step, a baby step forward. He didn't do enough to close the gap from 24-6, which is what the score was when they played Alabama. If you're Clemson and you're Dabo Swinney, I think this is what they know. They'll never admit this, but they're gonna play Trevor Lawrence as much as they can without losing football games. And I think that if you had to ask them, they were surprised that A&M played them as closely as they did. I don't think that even with Lawrence in the game and taking your lumps with a freshman on the road in a hostile environment, I still think they thought that they would probably win comfortably against A&M. And I mean, you know, 10 points or more. But what happened was Lawrence got in the game. They got up. They should have been up. Well, they were up 21-3,
yep,
I believe. And then A&M started to come back. But as the offense started to stall, they went back to Bryant before it was too late, and they won the game. That's fine. All they need to do is win. I think that they're going to keep playing Lawrence. That was the big hurdle. It's like now you got past that. I mean, you look at the rest of their schedule, and I don't know that there's another surefire loss on there. Well, there's definitely not a surefire loss, but even a game that's going to challenge them is until NC State and Florida State at the end of October. I think between now and then, the goal for Clemson is to try to get Lawrence as ready as possible to play those A-plus teams, which is going to be the challenge for them in December or January.
Yeah, look, I mean, going back to your point a second ago, Texas A&M did make that game close. Kellen Mond looked great. I mean, he did.
Yeah.
Kellen Mond looked really, really good. And I think Jimbo and Kellen Mond are going to be a hell of a duo moving forward. But, you know, I think the quarterback platooning is problematic just inherently. You know, even if you had two seasoned guys, inherently that's kind of a hard thing to do. And then you're factoring in a true freshman. It's very, very difficult. But I don't know. First of all, Clemson's secondary could probably use a little bit of tweaking right now.
Sure.
It needs a little bit of work. And that defensive line, I think they just know they're good. Mm-hmm. And they always feel like they have a game in control or under control. If they were to play that game start to finish with one quarterback and with a playoff intensity, they would have beaten Texas A&M by three or four
right.
touchdowns. I mean, it wouldn't have been close. Now, you give credit to A&M. They made some plays. They made it interesting. But those two teams don't belong on the field together.
Right.
They just don't.
Right. Can we stop with your going back to your platoon thing? Can we stop with the idea that all of a sudden a two quarterback system is going to work in college football?
It doesn't.
It has never worked, and it will not work. And Tua Tagovailoa winning the national championship last year was the worst thing that could have happened to all these programs that are now trying to play two quarterbacks. Clemson platoon quarterbacks on Saturday and nearly got beat by a team that was two touchdowns worse than them in their building. Okay, when you split these quarterbacks and you rotate, you stall your offense, you lose your rhythm. That's what happens. The only reason these guys are playing early in the season is A, to keep kids from transferring, and B, Alabama is so good it doesn't matter who plays quarterback, they're going to win anyway. To use Alabama as the model or as the example of, oh, well, a two-quarterback system could work. Guess what? Alabama has won national championships with Blake Sims playing quarterback. It doesn't matter who they put under center. They're 20 points better than pretty much any team they play the second they step on the field. When you're a team that actually has vulnerability or has something or has weaknesses, that doesn't work. I mean, it's not going to work, and it almost bit Clemson in the ass in their second game of the season.
No, it absolutely did. What is the one quarterback platoon that we always point to and say, well, it worked then?
Florida.
Chris Leak, Tim Tebow. That's the one that we point to. What other one can you point to? And I don't mean you won a bunch of games, you won 10 games, or maybe even you won a conference. No, when is the last time a team won a national championship doing it? It's the only one we point to. Virginia Tech tried to do it with Tyrod Taylor and Sean Glennon. It was an absolute disaster.
Right.
This is not going to work either. Clemson is not going to win a national championship this way. I firmly believe that. Now, Alabama can, but it's because they're going to play Tua Tagovailoa, and that's it. You know, Jalen Hurts is not going to – he may not hurt this team, no pun intended, but he's not going to win games for this team. So this is not a system. It's not a thing that works. What this is, and I think you and I both know this, is that because of the changing nature of the NCAA, of amateur sports, of college football, guys are transferring, and they're transferring all the time, and they have no patience for losing out on a job and sitting behind and being a backup. Guys aren't doing that anymore.
Right.
Dabo knew that. He knew that if he named one of these two guys the starter, he ran the risk of the other transferring. Now, less so with Trevor Lawrence. He was a true freshman. He may not have gone anywhere. But if he names Trevor Lawrence a starting quarterback, Kelly Bryant's gone.
Right.
So that's why we're in the situation that we're in right now. It's the same thing at Florida State with Willie Taggart, with James Blackman and DeAndre Francois. He names one of those guys a starter a month before the season. The other one's transferring. Yep. It happened at Nebraska. Scott Frost named his starting quarterback.
And they just lost a game because of it.
And they just lost a game because of it. That's the new world of college football that we live in.
Yeah. And, you know, think about Ohio State in 2014. They had Cardale Jones and JT Barrett. They didn't platoon him. Cardale Jones came in when JT Barrett goes down in the last game of the season with an ankle injury, and Jones steps in. But that was not a platoon system. They had two great quarterbacks. They went with one guy the whole season, and Barrett was actually the backup. I mean, he was after Braxton Miller went down, but they didn't fiddle with it. They didn't try to get cute. Urban Meyer played JT Barrett, and then Barrett goes down, and he plugs Cardale Jones in. It's a luxury to have a great backup quarterback, something that's rare in college football, but I don't like the idea of messing with platooning these guys unless you are so much better than everybody that you play, which is the case with Alabama, and quite honestly, it's going to be the case with Clemson until they get to NC State in like 4 weeks.
That's exactly right. So they have the luxury of doing this the rest of the regular season because they could literally throw out you or me at quarterback, and as long as we weren't turning the ball over, which we probably would, but as long as we're giving the ball away, that defense and running game can win just about every game on this schedule. Look at Clemson's schedule. Who's going to beat them in the regular season? I thought Florida State might. I don't believe that at all anymore. So who's going to beat them?
There is not a ranked team on their schedule the rest of the way.
None.
I mean, and actually, if the rankings were to hold today, they would not play a ranked team all season long. I mean, A&M not ranked, and of course Furman. So they could go 12-0, this is not an Iowa situation. Clemson's going to make the playoff even if they run the table and don't play a ranked team all year long.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes it easier for them to play this game and try to give Trevor Lawrence a chance, because basically what Clemson's doing, Clemson has a 12-week preseason before they get to the playoff. And this is their chance to try to give Trevor Lawrence a chance to win that job. Kelly Bryant, nice player, but we saw what he's not capable of when they go up against Alabama. Kyle, let's move on. Let's talk North Carolina right here in our backyard, in our home state, if you will. Larry Fedora goes in against East Carolina, loses 41-19, and I'll be honest, I wrote on Sunday, he's a dead man walking. I know there's a buyout, $14 million. I know that North Carolina is a basketball school, and some people wonder if Larry Fedora will get a pass for being that second banana at the school. But let's face it, Carolina has to move on. And that may not have to be tomorrow. I'm fine if they give him the rest of the season. But this program seems like it's at the point of no return. And I think that North Carolina is ready to find a new head coach.
I think they are, too. We've gone back and forth. We talked about it again today. My partner thinks that Lane Kiffin is the perfect hire at North Carolina.
No way.
I could not disagree more.
With the NCAA.
There's no shot.
No.
There's no shot. I mean, it's not. Now, would it be a fun hire? Hell yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be awesome.
Right.
It'd be hilarious. We'd have never-ending content on this show.
Yeah.
But it's not happening because, as Mike Felder of Stadium, you know, on Twitter, at In the Bleachers, said earlier today, and he's absolutely right, North Carolina does not have the stomach to make that kind of hire.
God, no.
North Carolina already sold its soul one time trying to be relevant in college football with Butch Davis, and it backfired. They're not doing it again. Lane Kiffin's not going to be the guy. Scott Satterfield from App State, probably not going to be the guy. He's not leaving App State, the best program in the state of North Carolina right now, by the way. He's not leaving that job to go to North Carolina, even if he is a triangle guy.
How much are they going to pay him, though?
Who?
Satterfield.
Satterfield's going to have his pick of a half dozen better jobs in North Carolina.
What jobs? I'm not to cut you off, but the Satterfield thing's interesting to me because I tend to side with you that I think he probably could get a better job. However, what jobs are going to come open realistically at the end of this season? Like, UNC's actually in a kind of a good spot right here because pretty much every SEC school has changed coaches in the last 4 years.
That's right.
So you're not probably going to be competing with anybody in the SEC. Mark Stoops just beat Florida. He's probably not going to be out of Kentucky, so that's probably not going to be – unless Kentucky just completely falls apart. I think they're going to have a good enough year where Stoops is not going to be concerned about losing his job. I mean, Muschamp's not losing his job. I can't think of any other SEC school that's going to be in trouble.
Maybe,
Tennessee just replaced its coach.
I was going to say maybe Vandy, but there's no point in even saying that out loud. I mean, there's not.
And even then, Carolina is a better job
than
Vandy.
That's exactly right.
So I don't know that there's a better job on the East Coast than North Carolina that's going to come open. I think that could actually play to their advantage. Now, Satterfield could certainly be patient and just wait his turn and stay at App State for another year. His stock's probably not going to cool too much. You do have to be – I would love to get inside the mind of a head coach that's weighing that risk. It's like, do I jump now at a job that's good, maybe not great, or do I wait and try to play my cards and be patient for a huge job? I mean, that's something Matt Campbell's probably dealing with at Iowa State right now too. So,
well,
I don't know.
What was that monster extension that he just got there from Iowa State? Do you remember the terms of that by any chance? I'm asking, putting you on the spot. His name came up in my mind as well because, look, that's a guy who has done wonders at Iowa State in no time. Jeff Brohm at Purdue is another guy that's done wonders in Purdue in a short amount of time. There is one name that if I'm North Carolina, if it's not, you know, you've got to call Scott Satterfield, and maybe he is more interested than a lot of folks think. I don't know. He's making about $425,000 a year right now, base salary, at App State. That is a far cry from the nearly probably $3.5 to $4 million a year that North Carolina would offer to pay him. There's another name that I think makes a ton of sense here, a ton of sense. It's Mike Houston at JMU. Mike Houston at JMU just won a national championship at the FCS level. Mike Houston took the Citadel. You know, I was down in Charleston before I came to Charlotte.
Right.
Took the Citadel to the FCS national championship game, I believe. It had them winning games hand over fist. Mike Houston is also a North Carolina guy and has been to multiple programs, built those programs up, won big. And I think that's another name to keep an eye on if you're North Carolina. You know, he is a guy that you know carries himself well, you know, with decorum, which it matters to folks out there at Chapel Hill quite a bit. That's a name to keep an eye on, too. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. Going back to your thoughts on Larry Fedora, what happened Saturday was the beginning of the end of Larry Fedora. Whether it's this week, next week, the end of the season, or the middle of next year, that marked the end of the Larry Fedora era. Maybe that $14 million buyout is not appetizing and they just can't bring themselves to do it right now. At some point, he's done, though. What he's done there is not impressive, and what's happening now is not sustainable, even for North Carolina.
Going back to Houston really quickly, the FCS to FBS route, there's two very different test cases for that. You have Chip Kelly.
You have Mike London.
And then you have Mike London. Well, that's it. There's two very, very different extremes, and it would take some guts to hire a guy like that who's a proven winner, who's had a lot of success. Does Bubba Cunningham have the stones to hire a guy from the FCS who's never recruited at a Power 5 level, at least not recently, and doesn't have that experience in the ACC? He's a terrific coach.
Yeah.
It could go one of two very different ways, and I wonder if that's the guy that they would go with. Some of the other guys that I threw out on Sunday, I threw out Tony Elliott from Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
The guy I really like is Seth Luttrell from North Texas. And Luttrell was the OC.
Talking about that,
he was the OC on the 2015 team that won the Coastal, and he has done a great job at North Texas. They were 1-11, I believe, the year before he got there, and they won 8 games last year on pace to win something similar this year, maybe more. He has Graham Harrell, I know you remember that name, from Texas Tech, running his offense, who's one of the hot young offensive coordinators in the country. That's kind of an innovative type of guy. To me, that's like exactly what you want to get if you're North Carolina, is an up-and-coming coach creative offensively, like what Larry Fedora was when he arrived in Chapel Hill. And you just hope that Luttrell, if it was him, could hire a better defensive staff than what Larry Fedora has done. And one of the things that I think people have ignored, Rossi Threestack is going to come on Friday and talk about this, our resident vice president of Tar Heel operations, about the coordinators. And Larry Fedora for a while had great coordinators. He had, you know, Walt Bell, Blake Anderson, or at least staff members, and also, of course, Luttrell. He hasn't hired a coordinator. He just and now I don't remember the guy's name, but he promoted the O-line coach. They don't have the same creativity on offense that they had those first 4 or 5 years at North Carolina. I mean, when Fedora got to UNC, they were wide open. They were fun. They had great quarterback play. You talk about Bryn Renner to Marquise Williams and then, of course, Mitch Trubisky. And then it's fallen off a cliff in the last couple of years. Also, Caleb Presley. Shout out to Caleb Presley. The greatest motivational I don't even remember his title anymore. I was literally the guy that gave him his break on ESPN. Now I can't remember what it was. He was supervisor morale. There we go. Just ever since Caleb Presley left the program, it's been in ruins. But that's a real thing, though. The lack of creativity at the offensive coordinator position coupled with poor quarterback play has really doomed them in the last few years. I think Luttrell will be an interesting guy. I think Luttrell, to me, is the number two call I would make after Scott Satterfield. But I do think that looking at the landscape of college football right now, Carolina might be the most attractive job to come open this season because there's been so much turnover in the last few years, which leads me to the question that you and I got into a few weeks ago on Twitter. Is this a great job? Is this a good job? Or is this a bad job?
I would say, just generally speaking, it's a good job.
Yeah.
It can be a great job for the right guy. You know, and maybe you can say that about most jobs. I'm not really sure. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't know. But there's such brand power at North Carolina. It's in a great conference, you know, phenomenal region, great climate. I mean, there's just so many things going for it. And I've often not understood how no one has been able to win more consistently there, right? I mean, we talk about the lack of a football culture, and that's true. They don't have a great football culture in Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill and Charlottesville, very similar in that way that you walk onto campus on a game day, you don't even know it's a game day. You know, it's just the culture's not there. But that can be overcome by a good coach because you have facilities, you have money, you have brand power. I mean, you've got the power of the Jordan brand behind you. You got right. The Carolina blue. Like, that can be a great job for someone. Mack Brown has proven that. And Larry Fedora came close to proving that.
Yes, I mean, he did.
He came very close to proving that. I've never been, and this is one thing that Frank Garcia said time and again that I agree with him on, that, you know, Frank is a coach at Charlotte Catholic here, and he's interacted with Larry a ton over the years when he's recruiting some of those guys, Elijah Hood, obviously. And again, I'm not going to speak for Frank, but I'll tell you what he said time and again. He'll say, when he walks in a room, he doesn't have the presence of a head coach. You know, he doesn't feel like when you're talking to him that he's got that swagger about him, that composure, that presence of a head coach. And he believes that translates sometimes to the sidelines, to the locker room. And, you know, to the extent to which that's true, I'm not sure. I'm not there. But, you know, I trust the word of guys like that. And I think that, you know, Larry came close, but he's not going to get back. And he's lost the faith and the support of a lot of people out there. And I think maybe Larry's a better coordinator than he is a head coach. Or maybe North Carolina just ultimately is not the right place for him. I don't know. He's more of a Big 12 country kind of guy.
Right.
Maybe he'll go back to finding more success in that part of the country when and if he's fired at some point. I don't know. But it is a great job for the right guy. Across the board, it's a good job, not a great job. But somebody there can win and win big.
It is a good job, and it is a stepping stone job. But I don't mean that with a negative connotation. That is a job where if you're UNC, best case scenario, you're hiring a coach who in 6 years has taken you to maybe one ACC or two ACC championship games, won 8 games on average, had a couple great years, and leaves for a bigger job. I mean, I think that's the best case scenario. You're not at North Carolina, you're not going to hire a coach who's going to stick around and win 10 or 11 games every year for you. I mean, pie in the sky. If he has that kind of success, somebody else is going to come calling. You know what else, or another school that's like that? Virginia Tech. If Justin Fuente wins 11 or 12 games for 4 straight years, you don't think that Oklahoma or Texas or one of these big-time blue blood programs is going to come calling? They will. And it's going to be really hard for a guy like him who is not an alum of the school to turn down one of those big-time jobs. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I think there's about 8 to 10 jobs in this country that are destination jobs, and the rest of them are stepping stones. Now, that's a sliding scale, how great of a program is it? But I think Carolina is a job where the best you can hope for is win 8 games every year. This is what Carolina fans want. They want you to win 7 or 8 games. Don't suck. Beat State, beat Duke. And if you can win 10 or 11 games once every 5 years, great. And that's what Larry Fedora did.
Yeah.
Until last season, and then this year it's gone even further south.
I'm going to disagree with you on one thing, and that was just that last part of that stepping stone job thing, and here's why. You know, people know exactly who we are. If you're listening to this podcast, in all likelihood, you know that we both went to Virginia Tech. So I want to be completely, you know, open and honest about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a stepping stone job. I don't, and not anymore. I think that is it on the same par as Bama or Texas or Michigan or Notre Dame? No, I don't think it's on the same level as those jobs. I think certain guys will be lured away for those jobs because they don't have strong ties. They don't have the kind of personality to fit. You know, but by and large, I would put that as one of the top 20 or 25 jobs in the country, and I always will. So are there some jobs that are bigger with more prestige? Yeah, I do think that there are better jobs, and there are certain guys who, if they have a job like Virginia Tech, will be lured away for a couple more million dollars a year and the prestige and history of a Michigan or a Notre Dame. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think Justin Fuente is one of those guys.
Well, I wasn't so much speaking about Fuente as it was the job.
But, yeah. but whereas I think unless you're an alumnus of the University of North Carolina, you have that particular draw or tie to the university, that very much is a stepping stone job right now.
Yeah.
That could change, and I don't think that North Carolina should even be that kind of job right now. I know we're in a basketball state. I know North Carolina is a basketball-first university, but North Carolina is one of those schools, I think, that has the ability to succeed in both sports and always has. North Carolina is a talent-rich state when it comes to high school football. I know it's a very crowded state as well. You got Carolina, NC State, Duke, Wake, App State, ECU, all competing, you know, in that same pool of Division I talent. That's problematic. Most states don't have that, and that's something to take into consideration. But, you know, North Carolina, I think above all of them, and look, App fans, State fans will hate to hear me say that, and that's okay. It's not a disrespect thing to them, more so that North Carolina's brand power, being the flagship university of the state of North Carolina, should allow it to be one of the premier jobs in the country, at least one of the premier jobs on the East Coast, and it hasn't been that.
You want to know what the dirty little secret is about UNC? It is closer to Richmond and to the 757 than Virginia Tech, significantly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was just
having this conversation with someone today.
It is a much, much shorter drive to get from either Richmond or from the Hampton, Tidewater area to Chapel Hill than it is to get to Blacksburg. I mean, UNC should feasibly out-recruit Virginia Tech when it comes to protecting the area. And they haven't done that. And Justin Fuente made a point to come into the state of North Carolina, probably overhyped it a little bit, but they've tried to come into North Carolina to recruit. And I think that coupled with them beating the doors off UNC for the last 2 years has not helped Larry Fedora's case whatsoever. He's starting to lose ground, not just to Virginia Tech, but to NC State. I mean, Doran is making better inroads in the state as well. And it's just fascinating to me. Fuente told me that specifically last year. He said, we're further away from the two most fertile recruiting territories that we normally cover than UNC. I mean, it's hard for us. And Charlotte, same thing. Charlotte's the same distance from Chapel Hill as it is from Virginia Tech, which is why Virginia Tech's tried to come into Charlotte a little bit more.
Right.
Something Brent Beamer and the old regime probably neglected a little bit. But you're starting to see other programs, not just Virginia Tech, NC State, Clemson, and Georgia, coming into North Carolina and recruiting really well. And that's made it really hard when the two things that you normally sell on the recruiting trail is either success or hope. Hope for the future. And Larry Fedora doesn't have either one to really sell right now, and at some point you just have to cut bait, even if you've had success in the past.
Yep.
So let's move on. Let's talk about every week, Kyle, I want to do a Go ACC moment of the week, hashtag Go ACC. I think this week there was an easy pick. I didn't even do my research. I literally was like, oh, okay, Florida State backpack. That's it. That's the one. So Florida State has the turnover backpack, which we would probably be making fun of even if they had beaten Virginia Tech and won by 40 against Samford. But when you get housed by Virginia Tech in your own stadium and then you need to come back to beat an FCS program, you probably shouldn't be opening yourself up to even more criticism. This reeks of the turnover trash can last year with Butch Davis. Willie Taggart doesn't need to give the social media world any more ammo to make fun of his program right now. Are you pro team backpack? Are you severely anti? Like, do they need to get rid of it tomorrow?
It's embarrassing.
Danny Cannell said something on our show on the midday show on WFNZ earlier today. He said that they need to take the playbook and the game film from Virginia Tech and from Stanford, put it in the backpack, and then burn everything. Burn the backpack and everything and just move on, start it over anew.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I mean, Florida State, how do you feel about Florida State going forward after what you've seen?
How do I feel about them? I think that they are a horribly coached football team. I do. I think they're a terribly coached football team. How can you not be with that much talent? Mm-hmm. What other reason would there be for that team to be so disappointing at this point in the season. Like, okay, maybe they don't have the same caliber talent as Alabama does, but we all know
it's not that far.
It's not that far off, no. Right? So what other excuse? These kids just apathetic. They don't want to play football. No, I don't think that's it. I think they're a poorly coached football team. And I think Willie Taggart, who might be the nicest guy in the world, has never won a thing of substance as a head coach in big-time college football, ever. And this whole lethal simplicity thing is laughable. You know what looks simple? Stopping everything they did on Labor Day night because Bud Foster was living in their playbook, right, and that defense was living in the backfield. Willie Taggart's now 0-5 against Justin Fuente in his career. I just think they're a poorly coached football team, and I don't know how much better that's going to get.
I think you bring up a great point about the disparity between the talent that they have and what we've actually seen on the field. I might put a little bit more stock than you in the attitude of the team, because last year we could point to two things. One, Francois going down, and that just, I mean, completely sucking the life out of your team, which, to be honest, is kind of understandable. I mean, a team that had national championship aspirations, you get emotionally beat down by Alabama and physically beat down, and then you lose your quarterback. I can see how a season could go haywire after that. You couple that with the fact that Jimbo Fisher had one foot out the door halfway through the season, you can understand why things went sideways. I thought that Willie Taggart would come in and get these guys all pulling in the same direction for this season. I picked Florida State to win the ACC Atlantic. I thought they had the talent, and I still think they have the talent, to beat anybody on their schedule. But clearly there's a lack of focus, preparation, something along the way that Willie Taggart has not been able to correct. And you're right. Willie Taggart has not won something of substance. He's kind of halfway turned some programs around and then bolted for the next job, yep, before it was ever really seen through. Won a lot of games with prior players or prior coaches' talent, rather. So I'm with you. I still think Florida State has way more talent than what they've shown in the, yep, first 2 weeks. And I actually
– Although I'm going to stop your train of thought. What I suspected about DeAndre Francois I think is true. He's not that good. He is a big, athletic kid with a missile for a right arm. But lots and lots of dudes have had missiles for arms, yeah, and done nothing at the college level or the pro level. Even Jamarcus Russell, who was a bust, right, at the NFL level, made some plays at the collegiate level. Monster arm. 10-cent head. I don't know about DeAndre Francois on that front. All I know is from the second I saw this kid take the field until I watched him last week against Samford, I think he's overrated. And I think that needs to be said. Because we can watch all the game day features on him we want. We can read all the comeback stories and everything else. He's just not that good, Josh.
Well, and look, 2 years ago, he got a lot of credit. He was a tough guy. I mean, he got knocked, yep, down, beat around as a freshman against behind a horrible offensive line. And he kept coming back, threw 400 passes that year. And had statistically a pretty good season. But with a team that probably needs as much leadership as it can get right now, there are severe question marks. If you listen to Florida State reporters who talk about this team, there were question marks about his leadership. That was really the biggest reason why he didn't win the job earlier than he did. I mean, James Blackman, we saw the limitations on him last year. While he improved, I mean, James Blackman weighs 160 pounds soaking wet, not ever going to have an NFL game in his future. DeAndre Francois at least has some talent, but DeAndre Francois' off-the-field concerns with the marijuana issues and things like that, I think it was clear that they were concerned about his leadership with this team. At this point, I think they might actually benefit from having someone maybe with a little less talent than Francois, but somebody who at least is a steadying force at quarterback. I wonder if Blackman doesn't get a shot eventually. I mean, right now, Francois, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, really struggling, was obviously awful against Virginia Tech. I don't know. But as far as Florida State going forward, I still think they have enough talent. One thing that on the Willie Taggart note, that you just mentioned, where he hasn't won anything of substance. It kind of reminds me, he's had more stops than this guy, but Butch Jones, remember Butch Jones followed Brian Kelly at Central Michigan, won with Brian Kelly's players, went to Cincinnati, won with Brian Kelly's players, and then got to Tennessee and had to build a program and didn't know how to do it.
Nope.
And to me, Willie Taggart, you start to see the parallels there. You start to wonder, well, this guy has had success winning off the backs of whoever the previous head coach's players were at every stop. Is that who Willie Taggart is? Is he a guy who can come in and win with previous coaches' recruits, or can he actually build a program?
No, I think that's a legitimate point. I mean, who did he follow at Western Kentucky?
I don't remember if he was pre or post Petrino, but this was a team that won a lot of games.
Was he pre or post Jeff Brohm?
He would have been pre-Brom, post-Petrino.
Right.
They would have been in between
those
two.
So it would have been in between them, right?
Yep. Yep, because Petrino was there for 1 year. So it's not like Petrino really built a program either.
But
he inherited a Petrino team that won 10 games.
That's right.
So, yes, he has always
inherited. And they brought in talent because, you know, a lot of that best mid-level talent, and then you had some transfers.
Right.
You know, you had a lot of those guys flocked to Western Kentucky to play in Petrino's offense.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there when Taggart showed up.
Exactly.
Is he riding the wave of coach? I don't know. Maybe. All I know is I'm not impressed so far. I know that.
So let's go on this note, because I want to do ACC stock watch. Every week I want to buy one team and sell one team. Now, I don't just mean we're not buying, okay, Clemson because they're the best team in the conference. I'm talking, is there a team that you want to buy low on or a team you want to sell high on? I'm going to go off of your path here for a second. I'm going to buy a Florida State stock because I still believe in the talent that they have, and I think that teams are never as bad as they looked the week before or as good as they looked the week before. I think Florida State still has an opportunity to bounce back. I'm going to withhold judgment until I see them play with a full week's worth of preparation, not coming off an emotional loss. We as Virginia Tech grads know what can happen when you play on 4 days rest. So I give them not a full pass, but a slight pass for the way they played against Samford, because I know what we've seen that happen in the past where teams struggle in those games in that spot. So I'm going to buy low on Florida State. I don't know that they're going to upset Clemson later in the year, but I think this team could still win 8, 9, maybe even 10 games. I think that's still the ceiling for this team given the talent they have. There are not five or six teams in the country with more talent than Florida State. If Willie Taggart can somehow figure it out, I think there's an opportunity there for them to still win games. A lot of questions and a lot of question marks and uncertainty around the program right now. But I want to pump the brakes on making sweeping judgments about how good this team can be until we see them play with a little bit more normal circumstances around the program. But is there a team right now that maybe that's a little under the radar in the ACC, not Clemson, not Virginia Tech, but a team that you're buying stock on that you think is only going to get better as the season goes on?
As the season goes on, that's a good question.
There's a lot of buy low opportunities in the ACC because pretty much everybody stunk.
Yeah, I was gonna say this one though. This might not even qualify, but I don't think that nationally anybody's talking about them. Maybe they won't ultimately in the end, but I want to see what Boston College looks like tomorrow night against Wake Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Boston College is on the road, but that's a 4.5-point game right now in Vegas, and I am tempted to bet the farm on Boston College tonight to cover 4.5. I think they dominate the line of scrimmage, and I think Sam Hartman's going to have a rough night. I think he gets beat up. And Boston College in that Atlantic, which suddenly doesn't look so scary anymore, you know, outside of Clemson, I think Boston College is a real threat to finish second in that division.
Halfway through last season, I don't know what happened in Boston College. I don't know if Lincoln Riley just somehow cloned himself and went up to Boston College and went into Scott Leffler's body, because all of a sudden BC starts scoring 40 points a game. And their offense is picked up right where it left off a year ago. They haven't played anybody yet, UMass and Holy Cross. Tomorrow's the first opportunity for BC to play a real live Power 5 team and have a chance to prove themselves. I'm with you, man. 4.5 points. We're gonna bet these games a little bit later. But 4.5 points on the road against Wake Forest, a great spot for BC. They match up real well against Wake. Sam Hartman, I know my buddy Nick Wilson wants to go on and on about Wake Forest.
Charlotte
I know some
Kidd.
Of it's some tongue in cheek. Yeah, Charlotte Kidd, exactly. This is a different test for him. He's played Tulane and he's played Towson. He's going up against a real live ACC defense and a defense that has had a lot of success. Defense that didn't really skip a beat last year when Harold Landry went down with an injury. So they have talent. I think Wake Forest is in for a rude awakening tomorrow night in Winston-Salem. And A.J. Dillon, okay, it's almost – I think he runs the risk of being this year's so underrated, he's overrated guy, because at some point people are going to be like, man, why aren't we talking about A.J. Dillon?
Right.
He's going to keep running for 150 yards every game.
Until he faces Clemson and he'll run for 60.
Exactly. It's going to be almost the Leonard Fournette syndrome when Fournette ran roughshod a couple years ago and then played Bama and ran for like 10 yards.
Yep.
But A.J. Dillon is a great player, is the heart and soul of that offense. BC is a good program to buy somewhat low on. I mean, they're not ranked. They're not being talked about nationally. They're going to have a chance tomorrow night or Thursday night to play on national TV earlier than usual, 5:30. You come home from work, flip on, there's Boston College. There's A.J. Dillon rushing for 12 yards of carry. So I'm with you. How about I'll open it up to you here. Is there anybody that you want to sell high? There's not a lot of programs that are high right here, but is there any program that you think that you would sell going forward? And it doesn't have to be a team that's undefeated, just somebody you think might be in for a worse season than maybe their fans would like to hear.
Well, I think for injury reasons, I would say Duke, but I don't think that's necessarily what we're looking for here. But I think just the loss of Daniel
Jones. That's a very fair one, though.
I think the injury concerns, obviously, you would toss Duke in there. Honestly, Virginia Tech right now.
Okay.
And it's not because I don't believe at all that this team is going to be in the ACC championship game. It's that you can't do what they did offensively after that first drive for the rest of the game and expect me to believe that you're a real contender. Florida State gave them far too many opportunities. I mean, don't get me wrong, their defense played really well, and especially up front, and that's something that has to be considered. But when you march down the field and carve that defense up and cut them up like a hot knife through butter, and then the rest of the game they make one adjustment or two adjustments and suddenly you can't move the football at all, Josh Jackson goes through spurts where he looks like an all-ACC quarterback, and the very next drive, he looks like a third-string walk-on. I don't understand it, man. And so I just need to see more consistency out of them before I'm going to – it seems like everybody around me right now is wanting to buy into Virginia Tech wholeheartedly. Frank's talking about him maybe going undefeated this year, and I'm like, let's just pump the brakes a little bit right now because that's still a young defense. They are still perilously thin at certain spots.
Oh, yeah.
And that offense, no matter how much talent they have, and I believe they have a lot of talent on the offensive side, they got to prove it. I mean, they had a chance. They could have been up 31-3 in the third quarter against Florida State easily.
Yeah.
And that game should have been put away early, and they just didn't do it. And, yeah, they look great against William & Mary. That's awesome. Show it to me on the road against Duke, a good defense. You know, show it to me against some of these better teams. So even though I don't want to say this, if I had to sell a team right now, I'd go Duke for the injuries and Virginia Tech until I see more offensive competence.
I think that's very fair. I do look at the schedule, though, and I think, first of all of the toughest games are at home, every single one. If you had to rank the hardest games for Virginia Tech, the hardest opponents left, it's Notre Dame, Miami, Boston College, Georgia Tech. All four of those are home games. So being able to get them in Lane Stadium is an advantage. However, having said that, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too much today, but we will eventually. One of the most – people are going to hate me for saying this because I have a lot of Tech fans, and I know you do too, are going to listen to this. One of the most overrated home field advantages in college football is Lane Stadium right now. They have not won – at the level of a team that gets the reputation that Lane Stadium has. They have lost home games year in and year out, sometimes being upset. I mean, a lot of that you can attribute to the struggles in the Frank Beamer era, at the end of the Frank Beamer era, rather, and say, well, that was just a byproduct of the program taking a dip. But at some point, this program needs to become more than a Metallica song, because it seems like the most exciting thing that happens for Virginia Tech happens pregame a lot of times. and that's they sell that a lot. And the reality is they have struggled. If you look in Vegas, they're under 500 against the spread by I forget the number. I'll look it up, and we'll have it on a later podcast. At home, they're a team that underwhelms at home a lot of times. So to that point, not to go down that rabbit hole right now, but even though those games are at home, they haven't been as dominant at home as you might think, given the reputation that Lane Stadium has. I still look at that team, and I think, man, Notre Dame looks shaky. They beat a Michigan team that was directionless on opening night, and then they struggled themselves in week two. Notre Dame did, taking on a very overmatched team in Ball State, and they only won by 8. So Notre Dame does not look unbeatable, and they're going to be coming off of Stanford the week before. So Notre Dame's going to be coming off a really physical game, having to travel to Blacksburg for what's going to be by far the most electric atmosphere of the season for them. I think the Hokies do go 3-4. Well, you got to take out the East Carolina game now. 3-4-5-6. I think they're certainly 6-0 going into Georgia Tech. I think this is the year they're going to finally Fuente gets that rabbit off his back. 7-0 before they go to Boston College. I mean, I think they're 7-0 going into that BC game, and if they get past BC, I mean it's appetizing. That's all I'll say. And I say that knowing that a couple years ago they beat Ohio State and went 7-5. It can happen.
You think they beat Notre Dame?
No, I'm saying if they beat Notre Dame, they'll be 7-0.
No, I'm asking, do you think they beat Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame 2 years ago.
I think so. Look, a lot of what you said about Josh Jackson, you could say the same thing about Brandon Wimbush.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir on that one.
Brandon Wimbush has done nothing to prove that he is a consistent player, a consistent quarterback. Yeah, but again, I mean, that was a Michigan team that should have – Michigan played as badly – this is the thing. Michigan played so poorly in that game and had the ball on the 50-yard line with a minute left with a chance to tie. I mean, Notre Dame at home, you should have put a team like that away that was struggling as much as they did and couldn't do it. I mean, Virginia Tech right now is not as talented as Michigan, but certainly better coached, at least what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Which I hate to say because I love Jim Harbaugh, but I don't know what they did on that in South Bend on opening night.
Can I go back to something really quickly? Not to jump completely off the rails here. There's something I wanted to say earlier when you were talking about the Go ACC moment of the week.
Okay.
Pitt.
Yeah.
In an absolute rock fight with an in-state rival, you know, in the first half, 7-6. You know, they're winning at the line of scrimmage more often than not. It's a 7-6 ball game. Kondre Ellison is running the football well. Their quarterback play's not great, but you know, they're in the middle of an absolute just fist fight with Penn State. And suddenly it seems they stopped going to Olsen. The offensive game, the play calling changed. And all of a sudden they're getting boat raced. Now, I don't think Pitt's a great football team. But Pat Narduzzi puts competent defenses on the field. And offensively, they were just an absolute mess, you know, in that second half. They get outscored 44-0 in the second half. You know, in a game that maybe they weren't going to win and certainly probably shouldn't have won, but had a chance to win against an in-state rival and just...
Fall apart. I mean, James Franklin challenging a call in the last minute of the game just to rub salt in the wound for Pitt. I mean, you're getting embarrassed by your in-state team. James Franklin knows what he's doing. And you can, you know, some people might criticize and act like that. But at the same time, Franklin is making a statement that, hey, we are the team with the swagger and the confidence in the state of Pennsylvania.
Right.
And he's digging the hole even deeper for Pitt.
That's right. And Pitt, you know, or I should say App State, you know, went to State College.
Right.
And nearly won that game.
Right.
And Pitt, an ACC program, can't even hang in the second half? I mean, an ACC program with some history. I mean, it's been a long time since Penn State was – or since Pitt was really relevant. But you're at home. And you get boat raced in the second half by an in-state rival, 44-0. That's pathetic.
You talked about Pat Narduzzi having this defensive reputation. He did when he was at Michigan State.
He did when he was at Michigan State.
Since he's been at Pitt, they were 10th in scoring defense in the ACC, 13th, and then 9th. They haven't even finished in the top half of the league in scoring defense. So even the side of the ball where Narduzzi came in with a reputation, they haven't even been great on that side. The one year they were good was when they had Nathan Peterman and James Conner and Matt Canada calling the plays. Since those guys have left, Pitt's in disarray. I'm not a fan of Narduzzi. I don't like the way he carries himself. I thought some of the things he has said, I mean, not to make this a Virginia Tech podcast, but what he said after that Thursday night game a couple years ago was childish about the pass interferences and whatnot. I just think that you talk about guys who aren't impressive to me, like you were saying what Frank said about Fedora. Pat Narduzzi, to me, in an era where coaches are able to brand themselves and brand the programs and give this off this era of excitement, what is exciting about Pitt football? There is nothing to point to with Pitt that gets you razzed up. I mean, to me, Pitt – Narduzzi might be a guy. I don't know if he's on the hot seat. I don't know if that's a conversation people are having, but they haven't had a lot of stability. Narduzzi could be gone.
But I don't want to hear about stability. It's not an excuse, right? These guys get paid way too much money to start complaining about stability, right? You either recruit players and develop them or you don't. And you're there in Western Pennsylvania, and yes, I know you're butted up against the Big Ten schools, and you're recruiting against, you know, obviously Penn State, but Ohio State and the Michigans, and I don't care. You're an ACC program with ACC resources, and you do have a little bit of history. You're in a big market, and I just don't care. I don't want to hear it. Either recruit, develop, and win, or don't, and get out of the way for the next guy. And especially if you're going to rage and act the way that guy does on the sidelines and say the things that he does, win or shut up and get out of the way.
Exactly. No, I couldn't agree more. So on that note, Kyle, let's move on. Let's quickly rapid fire go through the games this weekend. Quick take on each game, and then move on. Several of the games – of course, are postponed or canceled because of
the hurricane. Let's talk about that.
I want to avoid that for now. I think there's a lot to unpack there. But if you want Kyle's full thoughts, go to his Twitter page.
Yeah, don't do that.
or just don't argue with Kyle because you'll lose. But we'll talk about the games that are actually being played. So BC at Wake, we already kind of addressed it, but let's go for it. So Wake Forest, 4.5 or 5-point favorites. Let's do them against the spread here. So these are not official picks. We'll do that later. I know you got 2 for the money on Garcia and Bailey. I obviously do my picks on Friday on the podcast as well. But it sounds like we're both leaning Wake here. I'm sorry, BC here getting the points on the
road. Love BC at 4.5.
Yeah. I think so too. We already kind of addressed the issue.
I think
there.
They win the line of scrimmage, I think Dylan runs for another 150.
One of the biggest advantages for Wake now is them moving the game up, maybe avoiding the rain. Because if this game, I thought this game was going to be played in Virginia Tech, UNC, or NC State, Notre Dame like conditions from a couple years ago, and give me all of BC if that was the case, where you know they're not going to be able to throw the football. A.J. Dillon would be the star of the game. I'll go BC as well. Miami at Toledo. Miami 10-point favorites. I don't know a lot about Toledo. I'm not going to pretend to. But I do think Miami bounces back.
Well, they bounced back against Savannah State, didn't they?
Yeah, but whatever. That was a scrimmage. This is a real game.
Oh, is it? They continue bouncing back, you say.
Would you go – okay, forget the points. I take Miami minus 10. Rozier or Nkosi Perry?
Oh, Perry.
I think so, too.
How much worse could it get?
I can't believe Rick is sticking with that guy.
I can. He's stubborn. And Georgia fans. I mean, that's his M.O.
Very true.
But that's his M.O. But, I mean, no. All Rozier does is turn the ball over.
I know.
He's a turnover machine.
I know.
Sure, he's a nice kid and his mama loves him, but he turns the ball over. That's what he does.
He should just have the turnover chain at all times. Florida State at Syracuse. So here you go. Here's your boys. Florida State. On the road against Syracuse, are you leaning towards taking the – really?
Syracuse.
Okay.
I'm telling you right now, Syracuse.
I think this is a really, really good buy-low opportunity on Florida State.
Really?
I do. I think – I love what Dino Babers does. This is the type of game Dino Babers wins. Syracuse has not been a great team for the last couple of years, but for whatever reason, when they play against the big boys, they bring out their A game. And they beat Virginia Tech. They've challenged Clemson – or they beat Clemson, I'm sorry. They challenged Miami a year ago. This is the type of game where Syracuse could make a statement. I think, look, if Florida State had even been close against Virginia Tech and had taken care of business against Stanford the way they should have, Florida State's probably favored by a field goal in this game instead of getting 3.5 points. So I think there's value in taking the more talented team. Would it shock me if Syracuse won? No, of course not.
They're going to win.
But all right. They're we'll going see.
To, Florida okay. State is bad. I'm just and I hate to say it because it diminishes the win in week one. They're bad, and I don't know. That might
change. You don't put any stock into the JMU syndrome of going on 4 days rest and being a team that just took one on the chin and has to play again 4 days later against a team that you know you could roll over out of bed and beat.
I don't know that they're going to stay bad, but I think right now they're really bad, and I think Syracuse will be fired up for a name brand coming to town. Dino Babers' offenses can score.
Right.
The defenses aren't great, but do you think Syracuse's defense is better than Samford? Because I do. I think they're a little bit better than Samford. And I think Florida State's defense is going to have to try to stop an offense that they can't stop. They can hope to slow them down. But I think the Carrier Dome's going to get loud. They're already 0-2. And if Syracuse punches them in the mouth early, Florida State will quit. They will.
You might be right. I think Florida State has to stay in the game early because if Syracuse gets ahead early, you could see what happened to them in Chestnut Hill last year where Boston College ran them out 35-3. So Georgia Tech at Pitt. So here's a nice ACC game for you. Georgia Tech coming off, what a tough loss for them. They had that game against South Florida, let it slip away from them late, 49-38. They're on the road against those Pitt Panthers. Pitt is 4.5-point underdog. So Georgia Tech road favorite. Can they cover 4.5 against Pitt?
Yeah, they can. But what did you think of that USF loss?
It wasn't great. That's the type of game they need to win. And Georgia Tech, don't forget, lost Kervante Benson. He's out for the year with an injury. He was one of their key running backs. Now, it seems like at Georgia Tech, they just plug and play. But to me, I think the South Florida loss signals to me this is there's two types of Georgia Tech teams. There's the 11-2 Orange Bowl Georgia Tech, and there's the 7-6 Georgia Tech. I think this is a 7-6 Georgia Tech team at best. The ACC being as bad as it is probably helps their case this year. But I think that losing that game to South Florida, a game that they pretty much, I won't say had control of, but had every opportunity to win late and letting it slip away doesn't bode well for them. I just think Pitt's in such a bad place right now. I do think Georgia Tech bounces back. I don't love swallowing 4.5 points on the road, but I think Pitt's that bad. I'm going to take Georgia Tech as a favorite 4.5.
After seeing what I saw against Penn State, I agree with you 100%. Pitt is that bad.
How about Ohio and UVA, the Music City Bowl being played in September in Nashville? Free admission if you want to go over to Nashville to see that game. UVA 5.5-point favorites coming off that 20-16 loss to Indiana, going up against a well-coached Ohio team. Okay, well-coached Ohio team that's one of the better programs in the MAC. 5.5.
Take Ohio in the money line.
And the money line.
Take Ohio in the money line.
You think the upset's coming?
First of all, imagine being a citizen of the great city of Nashville. You've got nothing to do this weekend. And you find out, oh, my God, Virginia and Ohio are coming to town. Not Ohio State, not Virginia Tech, but Virginia Cavalier football and Ohio Bobcat football. Mm. Who's not flocking to that? I'm kidding. I watched Virginia. Did you watch Virginia at Indiana Saturday?
I'll be honest. That was a Gamecast game for me.
Shamefully, I watched the game. I wish I hadn't watched the game.
Good for you.
It was miserable. Bryce Perkins, not a believer.
Okay.
Not right, a believer.
So you're not, because that was the X factor for them.
No, not a believer at all. And that was. And
can he throw the football?
No. Okay. Not at all. Don't be
seems problematic.
Don't be fooled by the Richmond win at all. Don't be fooled by this kid. Again, it's not that he's terrible. He's not winning them any games, and they're going to have to rely on that defense to win them games. And they got a lot of hype on that defensive side coming in, but they gave up 20 in the rain to Indiana the other night. And as well coached as Ohio is, and I agree with you on that, I think Ohio wins the game outright.
Wouldn't shock me. If you don't know anything about Ohio, they went 9-4 a year ago. 5-1 at home. They beat UAB in their bowl game 41-6. Frank Solich has done such a good job at Ohio for quite a while. I mean, they won 8 games the year before. So this is a good MAC program. Not an outstanding one, but 8 games in 2015. I mean, they've had a winning record each of the last 3 seasons. So they're going to be ready. They barely squeaked by Howard, but Howard actually not a bad FCS team. So for a MAC school, they probably should have beat Howard by more, but I'm going to give them a little bit of credit. They're coming off a bye. They did not play last week. So you get a rested Ohio team going up against UVA. Now it's no longer a road game. It's a neutral game. I think Ohio could win that game outright as well. I'll actually go with you. I'll certainly take the points, and if you really want to get squirrely, go with that money line. I like that. So Georgia Southern at Clemson. Are you touching 33.5 for Clemson swallowing those points against Georgia Southern?
That's tough. If this was Georgia Southern 7 years ago, no, right. Not. This Georgia Southern, maybe. Although I don't know. Because I think
I'm not betting it. I'm just telling you right now. I'm not betting. I don't know anything about Georgia Southern.
This is not.
And I don't care to know.
I'm probably not touching it either, and certainly not given the fact that Dabo is going to do a lot of tinkering on Saturday. Because the second they get up by three and a half touchdowns, that he's going to put Trevor Lawrence in the game, and they're going to keep trying to figure some things out there and get him some more snaps, and maybe Lawrence plays his tail off and they continue to boat race them. I don't know, but maybe not. So we'll see.
So they beat South Carolina State 37-6. They beat UMass 34-13. It's actually not a bad win over UMass. I mean, UMass has Andrew Ford, who had
That's
a great
true.
Year last year, and UMass got housed by Boston College. But Georgia Southern took UMass to the woodshed. That's impressive to me. I'll tell you what. In the 3 seconds of research I just did on this game, I would take the points. I would take Georgia Southern, knowing that I don't think Clemson's going to try to run them out of the building.
Yeah.
I don't think that's Dabo's MO. And because they're going to be tinkering with some things, and like I said, this is basically a 12-week preseason for Clemson, I could see this game being 35-0 early and then 42-10 by the end. So I would lean toward Georgia Southern, but I certainly wouldn't invest a lot of my well-earned capital on that game at all. But 2 more games in the ACC. I'm going to skip one of them because I think it's really interesting. I don't want to save it for last. Western Kentucky at Louisville. Louisville 21.5-point favorites. That is a large spread, my friend, for a Louisville team that has not impressed me so far.
No, and they struggled last weekend.
No, yes, they did.
Really, it was 7-7 late into that game, was it not?
Against Indiana State, it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was 7-7 with the Sycamores in like late third quarter, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't watch a single second of it, but I was watching the scoreboard.
Now, Western Kentucky lost to Maine last week.
That's
so we're,
problematic.
That's why it's a 21.5-point spread. They lost 34-3 to Wisconsin and then 31-28 to Maine.
But that's one of those numbers, like you just said, you don't touch that. Not given the way Louisville just played. I don't care who they lost to last week. I don't know enough about Louisville, and I don't think Petrino knows enough about his own team to even bet that line.
I know enough about Louisville to tell you this. They went 8-5 with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback.
Right.
I don't think that's ever getting any better than that. I know Petrino gets a ton of credit for being this great coach, gets the most out of his team.
How's it going to get better, Josh?
I don't see how Louisville
They don't
improves.
Even have any own talent in their own state. They can't recruit their own state. You can't just live off of talent from Florida. You know?
And that's Charlie Strong, that's how he won, was he recruited Florida pretty well while he was at Louisville for a couple years. Teddy Bridgewater came from Miami
exactly.
area.
Exactly.
And Petrino's not at that level. And he's recruited well. I mean, they have a little bit of talent, but
there's not a lot of cachet for Petrino anymore.
Well, no, not at all. And there's so many other problems that have gone on at Louisville.
Yeah.
That's another job. I could see it coming open at the end of the year. If I don't think it's likely. I'd say 5 out of 10 chance, which is higher than a lot of schools.
Yep.
If Louisville goes 4-8, 5-7 this year, Tom Jurich ain't there anymore. Tom Jurich was the guy who sucked his neck out for Bobby Petrino to give him that second chance. I could see them moving in another direction. It just wouldn't shock me. I mean, this Louisville team, they had their chance when they had Lamar Jackson. They didn't capitalize. Last game, Duke at Baylor. Baylor 6.5-point favorites right now. Obviously, that line wouldn't be as big if Daniel Jones was playing. I think that line moved probably 4 to 5 points with the news that Daniel Jones is going to miss some time with the injury. Also, Mark Gilbert out at cornerback for Duke. Does Duke have a chance in this game?
No.
I think Baylor runs him out of the building.
I do too, and it's because look, I think Duke's defense will play great for a while until they get tired because they're not scoring points and they're going 3-and-out. I think that's what's going to ultimately happen here. Now we could both be wrong about that. I love David Cutcliffe. He's one of my favorite people in sports.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and certainly in college football. And I think he's a hell of a football coach. And I'm sure that the kid from Connecticut, whose name I'm blanking on right now, is quarterback.
Quentin Harris?
Quentin Harris, thank you. That kid is going to benefit immensely from learning from David Cutcliffe in this experience. I have no doubt about that. They might get run off the field on Saturday. And that's simply because he's inexperienced. And that offense wasn't exactly dynamic against Northwestern either. They scored enough. Mm-hmm. It was the defense that won them that game.
Right. I mean, 21-7. It was a slugfest.
And unless that defense scores, you know, two touchdowns on Saturday,
right,
they're not winning.
Yeah. To me, the much smaller scale, less at stake. But this reminds me of what happened to Florida about 3 years ago when Will Grier was a freshman, where you had this really talented kid at quarterback that elevated your offense. And then he goes out, different reasons. Will Grier was suspended. But Will Grier leaves the offense. And who did they replace him with? Another Harris, Treyon Harris, at quarterback. Very much a run-first guy. Not much of a threat as a thrower, which neither is Quentin Harris. He's a predominantly run-oriented quarterback right now. And Florida's offense just was never the same. And they went from a team that probably could have challenged Alabama to a team that got run out of the building against them in the SEC title game. Much, much smaller scale here, lower stakes. But I think Duke went from a team that had a 9-win ceiling. Probably, I mean, we don't know how long Jones is going to be out. But as long as he misses the next 4 or 5 weeks, this is a 6-7 win team at best now.
Yep.
And what it does is I think it changes the complexion of the ACC. Big winner in the Daniel Jones injury. And I hate to phrase it like that, but Virginia Tech not having to face a Daniel Jones Duke
right.
team in a couple weeks
because that
changes the ACC.
That
race.
Was a losable game for
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. That was a perfect trap game for
yes,
Virginia
it was.
Tech.
That was a losable game for them. Duke was going to be fired up. They're going to know they were going to know the implications of that game. And they still might. But it's not the same.
It's going to be really hard for them without a guy who can
Bud
challenge
Foster's
Virginia
Tech. Bud Foster is going to torture Quentin Harris
exactly.
in that game.
Exactly. That reeks of a Virginia Tech blowout now. And it's a shame for Duke because that could have been a great chance for them. And the other kind of layer to that is that Jones will probably be back by the time they play Miami. So not only does Miami have – it's a Virginia Tech-Miami race in the Coastal. And not only will Virginia Tech avoid Daniel Jones, but Miami's going to have to play Duke with Daniel Jones. So now you look at that as the potential upset, even though that is in Coral Gables. I like Baylor as well. Baylor's a good program now. They got a lot of heat for losing 11 games last year. That was just a complete anomaly with the entire exodus of the program.
Matt Rule's a good coach.
Matt Rule knows how to win games. Matt Rule almost left to take the Colts job after going 1-11 at Baylor. If that doesn't tell you the amount of respect that he has around the community of football, not just college but the NFL, he's going to turn that around at Baylor, and he's already started to do so. Charlie Brewer is a great quarterback. Jalen McClendon, interestingly enough, is the backup there, former NC State guy at quarterback for Baylor. Jalen Hurd, another name, ever heard of him? No pun intended. 194 yards. I did not even know I was going there. 194 yards through two games. He was the old Tennessee running back. He's playing receiver now for Baylor. This is a chance for Baylor to make a statement, small one, but a statement against a team that they're at least they have turned it around after what they did last season, going 1-11. So I like Baylor in that game as well. That's all the games in the ACC. We're missing a few because of the weather, but
we don't want to talk about that, right?
I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get you irrationally angry. We've already gone an hour. We can't go another 2 hours here if we get into that. But hey. I appreciate you doing this. This is going
to
be fun. We're going to do this every week.
I'm looking forward
to it. We're going to try to do it every week if we can. I'd love to have you on
it
every week if possible.
Let's do
it. We'll have other guests coming up as well. Don't forget, rate and review the podcast. Give it 5-star rating. And when you leave your review, I need your name to be the most random college football player you can think of. Kyle, you've had an hour to brainstorm. You got somebody for me anymore
nope.
now? Come on, man. Oh, killing me.
Well, that's twice you've put me on
I know,
the spot.
I know. How about John Candelas? A little Hokie fan throwback. There you go. Cole's Colas.
Now, that's one that I like
I'm trying to pull some names out of here. Alonzo Tweedy, a little more recent.
Tweedy's a great one.
Yeah. There have been some great Tech names in the past.
I tell you what, I'll come armed with some good ones next week.
There we go. All right. You have a week to think about it. They better be good. All right, guys. Appreciate you listening. Make sure to check out CFBCountry.com for more content. I'll be having a couple articles up later this week. And Friday, we will do Take the Points with Rossi Three Stacks. Hashtag buy the boat. We're buying the boat, guys. Despite the fact that I might have lost money last week. But don't remember that.
I got to get a sweet hashtag too, by the way.
Hashtag buy the boat. That's coming your way on Friday. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.